And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3883 of the Survival Podcast, and something new and different, I would say for the first time in a while. We are starting a new series called Monday Mayhem, and I don't even know if you call it a series, a new show. This summer, I got back from vacation. My wife and I had talked about this a lot, and we decided that I was going to go to three shows a week, and that has not worked for me. It hasn't had any negative effect on the business or anything, but it hasn't worked for me. I feel like things are getting left out. Things are getting missed. And I also am just not happy with doing three shows a week. And I'm also not happy with just adding a show back. This show was built from 2008 to 2010 over an 18-month period in my car. And I just gave an interview to a lady yesterday named Amy, who does a show called The Author's Tea on Amazon, and this came up, this microphone right here. This was the first microphone that I ever had besides the shitty little one I used to use in my car with a headset. This was sent to me by a guy named Shannon Appleby, who actually did some work for people like Stephen King. And he sent me this way, way back in the day, and it doesn't even work anymore. This was like a gift when I moved into an office. And I said yesterday on that show that I keep this crappy ass, you know, it's not crappy. It's just dead. It's done its time and went to microphone heaven. But I keep this on my desk to remind me of where I come from, that I wasn't always, you know, where I'm at today. And what made the show successful, I really believe in the beginning, was kind of the off the cuff, high energy, just riffing stuff. So I'm bringing it back, and there's going to be some things that are a little bit different. I won't say this again next Monday because we've already kind of reintroduced it. But number one, there will be sponsor spots. They'll be like the second segment, though, so that we don't lead off. Number two, I will not be telling you everything that we're going to talk about during the day and kind of taking up 10 minutes in intro. We're just going to jump right into it, and then we'll have a few announcements right at the end. Right. So it's going to be very off the cuff. 45-minute target. If it goes an hour, it goes an hour. That's also the timeline that we used to do when we were doing our show from the 2006.5. Jetta Diesel TDI. You remember those days, right? And that's because it's how long it took me to get from Arlington to Frisco once I got on the highway. Because I promise you, for all the road rage you heard back in those days, if I had started before I got on the I-20 coming up out of Arlington and Mansfield, you would have heard a lot more. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to be trying to get you guys off to a really great start in the week. That'll be our final segment every Monday Mayhem. And we're just going to talk about what's going on. And if you have questions, do just like you see here. If you're in the live stream, put the word question. We'll try to make those work out for you as well. All right. So out of the gate, and my notes are missing. Jeez. But we're back to notes like I used to have in the car, right? Just some bullet points. How to sell communism to the youth. That's what I wanted to lead off with today. This has been in my head since last week, and that's the way I'm making up these bullet points. I just have a text file on my desk, top of my computer, and if something comes up, I throw a bullet point in it, and then Monday we'll do that. So, as I said last week, you know, you can say whatever you want about Trump, good or bad, and there's plenty of bad and plenty of good, in my opinion. A lot of bad, right? But some good. But, you know, one thing he's been talking about lately, and he ain't wrong about, is communism and the rise of communism in America. And it's not your mama's communism, I guess, like where it was socialism, but nobody wanted to call it that, where you could see that that's where it leads. But at least they paid lip service to democracy and blah, blah, blah. Now it's democratic socialism. That's pure communism. I mean, the democratic socialists of America are backing these candidates, and they're coming out and they're saying, you know, even when the candidate's like, we're for socialism, not communism, the DSA is like, hold on. Democratic socialism is communism, and we think it's wonderful. So you have to ask yourself, since back when the show started 18 years ago, if somebody had come out to run in any election anywhere in this country, other than maybe Portland or Seattle or maybe San Francisco, and said anything close to that, they would have been nuked to oblivion immediately. And now these folks are winning like major seats, like congressional nominations for seats that are so left wing that that nominee is probably going to be a congressman. We're going to have like three overtly communist representatives out of New York in this coming session. How? I think that's more important than the what right now, is to understand the how. How is this being sold? And it is the youth driving it, and young people have something going for them that is energy. And especially in off-year elections, right, where we don't have the president being elected, voter turnout is lower, whoever has the enthusiasm can get a lot of things done. That's generally why the party in power loses traction in a midterm, right? But how? How did this happen? It's actually very simple. People will grab onto something painful that they know is bad if where they feel they are at is worse. So what has been done, and I think this is very systematically done by the media and by the education complex as well, is these people have been convinced their life is completely miserable and there's no hope. They live in a time that in so many ways is better than, like, we kind of like Gen X guys, like 80s and 70s, man, it was great. And you older millennials are like the 90s were great. And there was a lot of good about that time. But we didn't have the opportunity that they have today. You couldn't just go someplace and start a life with instant income with the hustle and gig economy, right? Now, you're not going to get rich doing that or anything, right? But it is the reality that today you can go to just about any place with any population size at all and start a life just from that one thing. And there's 100 other opportunities that exist today. People that think they're poor are living better than people that considered themselves wealthy 30 years ago today, but yet they're miserable. And that is by design. And it's actually very easy to convince people that they're miserable. All you have to do is say, look at these people who have more than you. It's classic class warfare. And say it's all their fault that you don't have what you want, and they don't want you to have it. Right? Where most people that have actually built success in their life are like, look, here's how I got there. Here's the blueprint. Pick it up and run with it. So how do you get this done? You create such a fear. You create so much angst. And you convince them, basically you put them into a suicidal state, right? Why do people commit suicide? You know who never commits suicide? A person who believes tomorrow might be better than today. People commit suicide when they get to a point in their life, whether it's real or imagined. This is the best. Remember Office Space, Peter Gibbons, right? Every day that I wake up is the worst day of my life. And the psychiatrist is like, whoa, that's heavy, right? Like that. So people with certain illnesses obviously might reach a point where, like, there is no point in going through the next 2 weeks of suffering when I know I'm going to die, and might decide to eat a bottle of pills. So you take the youth and you put them into that state, and then you offer them something that they normally wouldn't grab onto. So I want you to think about it this way. Remember the movie with the baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire, right? Or is it a TV show or something? I see the meme all the time with the guy with the bat with the barbed wire on it, right? Now imagine that barbed wire was actually worse. Like, it was razor wire, sharpened razor wire, Patrick Roorman sharpened razor wire. And I put that around the bat and I hold that bat out to you, say, grab onto it and I'll pull you up. And you're like down in a ditch and you need to come up like 3 feet. What are you going to tell me? Go get screwed. I'm not grabbing that. Okay. You're in ice cold water, high currents, about to go under the water, and it's the only thing that I have, and I put that down to you now, and I say, grab onto it. Guess what you're fixing to do? You're fixing to grab onto it. And that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Like, this is going to hurt really bad. I'm going to end up in an ER getting like 100 stitches in my hands. I might need surgery from this. But I'm either going to die, or I'm going to grab onto this thing that I know is bad because it's my only option. There you go. That's what they've done to our youth. That's how they're selling communism right now. You'll never own a home, which is patently ridiculous. If you're under 30 right now, you'll never own a home. And you look around and here's a 32-year-old that bought his house like yesterday. Like, somebody's doing it. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying, like, it's a bullshit thing. And then the whole thing with the boomers stole it. The boomers who were fucking 18 years old and going to Vietnam when all this shit started, right? Like, they had a say in the fucking world. This is nonsense, but it's exactly how it's being done. And it's why we need to be giving a message to people today of what's possible. You don't have to grab onto the barbed wire, razor wire wrapped baseball bat. You're not drowning. You're not dying. It's not the fucking Titanic that you fell off of and you're trying to climb up onto a door with Rose, that bitch. most evil human ever in a movie ever was Rose. I'm not going to talk about it, but if you know, you know, right? You're not in that situation, guys. Here's all the opportunities available to you. Will it work? I don't know. I think we are literally sitting in the middle of a fourth turning right now. There's no way around that. And fourth turnings usually end with war and death and misery and blood and guts. I hope not. But that's how it usually works out one way or another. Something is required of people to rise up beyond their own bullshit. But not every story has a happy ending. And if you look at places where communism has destroyed countries, some of them were the most amazing places just a few years before it happened. Look at Venezuela. Argentina is only just now beginning to crawl out of its own death spiral that it created for itself. And if you look across the world, communism is always something you can vote yourself into, but usually you have to shoot your way out of it. All right, moving on. Let's talk about our sponsors of the day real quick today. I do have two sponsors for you today. Sponsor today number one is KnifeKits.com. These guys have been around supporting the show since 2010. That's 16 years. They do what they say, and they say what they do right in the name of their company, KnifeKits.com. You can go get a kit knife. Kind of analogous to like when you were a kid, you did like a model car of a plane. Like there's a certain way to put it together and what have you. And you can make some really cool knives that way. Or you can take it to the next level with raw materials like buffalo horn and mammoth tusk and other stuff. Check them out today at KnifeKits.com. And then another great sponsor. Sponsor day number two today is Biltong USA. That's Anton Van Vuren, right from South Africa. He came here as a legal immigrant quite a few years ago. Set up a little business. He had a little cafe and stuff like that. He had just poured everything into it. And the year that happened was 2020. We all know what came next. Boom, the shutdown of the economy. He started shipping Biltong because that was an item that he knew he could ship and do something different with. He built his whole business on that. He also still has all the import stuff and a cool real-world location. Check him out today at BiltongUSA.com. All right, let's get back into it. Let's talk about a little bit about Bitcoin today. I'm going to go real quick through this, but I do think there's some things that you need to be aware of. I've been recommending that you guys put some money into Bitcoin since going back all the way to 2012. That's when I bought my first Bitcoin. That's when I accepted my first Bitcoin in my business. And many of you have done very well with it because you've taken the approach of buy a little bit every month, week, or even every day. And so you have a lot of wealth in it right now. So that's why I'll never stop talking about it, even though the formula is pretty simple. But something just happened. The Biptards, as I call them, led by Luke Dash Jr. or Luke Disjure. I don't know because there's no space in there, so I don't know what it really is. But this guy has clearly gone off the rails. He convinced these people for a year leading up to this mandatory activation of the 110 protocol that they could force change on the Bitcoin network with nodes. And I did a very long segment explaining why that's impossible. I spent the last 2 months on social media explaining to people who were going to get hurt by this, why it's impossible. Nobody believed me. 8-8 came and it lasted like an hour and it went to oblivion. And you would think that's it, that they learned. They did not learn. I would say about half of this pleb army that they assembled and convinced of this bullshit went, oh, okay, I was lied to. I'm out of here. The other half are a little bit more persuadable. And they have maintained the team. And now Luke is going out on his own and he is coding a new Bitcoin, which is really not Bitcoin at all, a fork, changing the proof of work algorithm to something called Blake 2, which is like a Satoshi similar to the original Bitcoin algorithm for something called Siacoin. Because there's a lot of miners out there, and it's basically ASIC resistant, meaning you could mine it also with GPUs. They're going to take Bitcoin back for the people. And they're referring to Bitcoin itself as BPedo because the idea that you could embed spam, that of course meant every child, you know, porn person is going to embed it in Bitcoin, even though this is not happening. It would be a terrible place to put it. So now they're going to come out, they're going to call it the real Bitcoin. I'm going to say, if you've been around since 2017 with Bitcoin, tell me if you've heard these phrases before. It's the real Bitcoin. It's what Satoshi wanted. If you disagree, bro, you need to read the white paper, right? And they're going to refer to what we have as the legacy chain. If you know anything about Roger Ver and the eventual rise of an even scummier guy named Craig S. Wright, This has all been done before. The difference is those people had hash power, they had money, and they had influence. Luke Dash has only influence with people that have no money and have no life. Honest to God. And the influencers that went along with this, like Matt Crater, they have no real pull anymore. They have all been laid bare as to how bullshit they were for all these years, right? And what I mean by that is they told these people, again, for about a year, that this plan, run knots with 110 on your node and on 8-8 will take the world over, would work. And there was no way that it could ever work. So they have lied. So they have no influence left except with people that don't really have any power. So this thing is going to be dead out of the water right from the gate. They're going to throw out a lot of FUD at you that, well, you need to claim your, you know, real Bitcoins or whatever if you self-custody. Here's what's going to happen. No exchange is going to support this. It's not going to trade for a buck a coin. It's the first thing you have to do to get liquidity into any sort of altcoin, which is what this is. It's not the real Bitcoin. It's an altcoin. You have to get on an exchange. There has to be a way for people to give you money for your coins, right? There has to be some form of depth of liquidity is what it's called in any trading space. No exchange is going to support this. It's a nightmare for customer service. If you support it, all of a sudden you have to worry about, hey, this guy has, you know, two Bitcoins on your exchange. Does he get his other two like shit coins? That was the way that like Bitcoin Cash happened. It was a mess. It cost exchanges huge amounts of money and confusion and pain. They're not going to redo this for something with so little demand. So what you should do about it is be aware of it. So if you hear about it, you can say, that's great. Big thumbs up, bro. Go for it and go on with your life. Because there's nothing that you need to do. If that changes, if they end up being worth a few bucks or something and you have a few Bitcoin, you'll always be able to split them off, assuming you self-custody or the exchange that you're on and holding on decides they want to do that. I don't see any of this shit happening at all, okay? There's also another thing. So I have always been a big fan of the Trezor as a hardware wallet, and I actually just got a brand new Trezor sent to me by the company for a review. This is the Model T. This is the one that I primarily use and recommend, and then we just had the big cold card exploit. And a lot of people lost a lot of money on that because there was a bug in the code, basically. I won't rehash the whole thing. But Trezor is an open source product with true random number generation for your seed phrase. And if you're using one, your Bitcoin is safe. And it will also hold other coins like Ethereum and other altcoins. All of it safe. You don't have anything to worry about. What just happened to Trezor, though, their third-party vendor, the people that actually ship the product for them, had a customer database breach. And if you bought one in the last 3 months, you were probably part of that breach. And that means that whoever stole the data knows your name, your email, and your physical address, and probably your phone number. Does this put your Bitcoin at risk directly? No, it doesn't. No data like that would ever be given to a ship. Trezor doesn't have that data. Right. You generate that seed phrase when you install the firmware on the device and flash it and you set up your wallet. So no one ever sees that but you. The danger now is if you're in that group, you're going to be targeted for phishing attacks by email, which happens anyway. And I think if you live in the United States, that's about it. And they're getting sophisticated. Like we just had two attempts to use phone calls to sucker my wife into giving up a freaking credit card number to a company we don't have a credit card with, so that made it easy to recognize. But they're getting more and more sophisticated. So just know this to protect yourself from like the phishing shit. No company is ever going to contact you and ask you any information about your Bitcoin. And even if they did, you shouldn't even tell them anyway. Not that you need to know, right? Like, do you have not that you need to know, right? Just so that part is gone. Who I'm concerned for in this, far more than anybody in America. In America, you go to a Bitcoiner's house to try to, you know, wrench attack them or whatever, you're probably getting shot and bit, right? And you're not even sure of what you're rolling the dice. Just because this person has a hardware wallet, they might not have set it up yet, right? They might only own like $5,000. And you're taking a big risk for that $5,000 if you get away with it, right? So I don't think that's a big deal in the States. Europe has started to have a lot of like breaking and entering attacks on people because they've identified those people. And of course, especially in France is where this is really bad. You have a huge amount of North African immigrants that, you know, a few thousand dollars is a lot of money. It's untraceable, at least they think so. And then they can go on after they steal it. And you're not going to get shot in France. And so there's been some of these, like what they call wrench attacks, which is basically you break into a guy's house and you hit him with a wrench until he tells you the seed phrase. Those people I'm a little bit more worried about. The good news in this, the policy that Trezor has is they maintain this customer database for 90 days. And they do that because that's within your return window. I don't want it. I want to send it back and get my money back. So they need you in there. And so if you bought one 91 days before this happened or further back, you're not in the breach. So it's a small window of customers relative to the total. However, this starts to take things to another level. I believe these types of attacks are going to become more and more common. AI is not actually creating the breaches. What it's doing is it's finding the weakness. And I think what you need to understand how AI would find the weakness is what it's replacing. So when you are a hacker, you're not usually looking to hack into Jack Spirko's or Tom Cicero's or, you know, Nicole Sauce's or John Willis's account, right? You want to get a big payday. That's why you go after something like a customer database, right? Or, you know, the Department of Veterans Affairs lost something like 28 million veterans' personal information, including my own, about 15 years ago. That's an example. Like the credit bureaus. By the way, yeah, if you have credit, right, your information was already stolen because TransUnion or whoever it is, they were hacked and there was like 130 million people's data, right? But there is a risk-reward ratio in how much you have to invest in money. And so what they would do is, as hackers, you can only spend so much effort trying to get into something. And the people that can actually identify the weaknesses, like the people you see on TV in like a crime show, like the one that was recruited, the super hacker with ponytails, it's like, I'm hacking into what? The thing that you have access to as a federal agent fucking anyway? Like that shit's not real. Hacking is not that simple. And what you end up doing is you take this team of people that are very expensive people to find vulnerabilities. And generally, the only people that can really afford a great team like that are the big companies that are protecting the data. Like the guy that's trying to hack you out of a garage in Istanbul can't spend that kind of effort. But now what they're doing is they're turning the AI agents into red teams to find the vulnerability and then using classic hacker techniques to exploit the vulnerability. What that means for you, you probably want to get the cheapest PO box you can somewhere close to your home, and anything that you buy that you do not want your physical address associated with, have a chip there. And that would not just be something like a Bitcoin hardware wallet. I'm sure you can think of other things that you might purchase that you would prefer that people not know where you live. That is a shitty world that we live in, but I think you can do that for about $14 a month. And I'm just saying, if you buy things like this, that this is an ongoing risk now. I'm not worried about somebody getting my private seed phrase, but I really don't want my personal information breached in a breach like this. And it's the physical address that's really the most dangerous aspect of it. Your name, your email, and your cell phone number is already known to anybody that wants to know it. I don't care how you did it. I promise you. Unless you have like a burner phone that you bought with a credit card that's a gift card or something. Like if you have a standard wireless number, your name, your number are associated with it, and probably every email address you ever did. Like that's yesterday's news. So one more time, if you get contacted by anybody, no, do not give any information. I don't care if it's on the phone. I don't care if they call and tell you they're from your bank and seem to know things they shouldn't know. Hang up, call your actual bank and talk to somebody at your actual bank. Don't call a number somebody sends you. Look it up independently, same type of thing. No one's ever going to ask any of your information. The ones that tried to scam my wife, she knew it. So she's baiting them on, brings it to me. And I started asking them questions. They hung the phone up. Right. So you know what you're dealing with. All right. Now let's move on. How about flock cameras, right? So there's real hatred of flock cameras, and I am on team hate flock, okay? And I don't want anything I say today to dissuade you from believing that. And there is now like this this movement, and it's being done in two ways, okay? One way, and the banging you're hearing is my handyman, and you're going to have to deal with it today. It's old school, just like being in a car with car noises. Anyway, the issue we have here with these flock cameras is you have two angles of attack. I have heard from several people in the past couple weeks who have had flock cameras absolutely just removed from their communities. I've heard from one, they basically marched in and just demanded that the entire town council resign. And they flipped the town council and the mayor and got this done. I've heard of them being pulled off school grounds and other things like that. So that's one tactic, is people are taking, let's say, the legalistic approach. The other tactic is a little bit different, right? They're doing anything from trying to blind them with lasers, which, by the way, probably won't work. Just really the lasers that you can buy that are cheap on Amazon and all just don't have the intensity, and you have to hit it just right, hold it for a sustained period of time, just a little flicker flash. We'll blind it while you're doing it, and it'll keep working. But when you cut it down with a Sawzall, that works. When you get that sticky foam insulator filled shit from like Home Depot or Lowe's and you spray it all over the camera lens, that also works. There's a whole bunch of ways to make these things a no buena pataca anymore, okay? Right? Not good for shit. Right? And you know, my heart goes out to people doing it. I hope you don't get caught. That's all I'll say, right? I have not encouraged that behavior, because sooner or later you're going to get caught. My instinct is a lot of these cameras are going to start having secondary cameras that are little peepholes in the side of the the poles that they put these things on. Just like, you know, the people that were setting Teslas on fire and shit a couple of years ago, right? They started getting caught because it turned out, like, when you approach a Tesla, it's got all these cameras everywhere. A company that makes cameras like that is going to be able to put that security into their new. So I think that's going to become a concern for people engaged in this form of, let's call it, community activism, right? For privacy concerns. But I think there's a bigger problem. The one thing you can actually say about a flock camera right now is you're like, oh, there's a flock camera. There's maps you can look up that shows you where all the flock cameras are, okay? And they are very obvious. They have a very distinctive look. They are a standalone pole with this camera thing up on top of it. And if you've spent any time on the internet in the past couple of months, you know what one looks like, because you've probably seen somebody carrying one they cut down with a Sawzall. Do you think that getting rid of those is actually going to stop surveillance? How big does a camera have to be in 2026 to get all the information and relay it somewhere? So where can you embed tiny cameras inside things where you can't see that's what they are? Every pole everywhere. Every pole everywhere. Every light post, every traffic post. Right now, if you drive around in a lot of places where they have ITS, which is intelligent traffic services, and most of this data, I will assure you that most of this data is actually being used for what they say it is, because I was actually in one of the data centers that does all this work for Tarrant County years and years ago. And literally there's people there like reporting and like looking where accidents are and shit like that, and letting local PD and state PD know what's going on and where they need to clear intersections, things like that. Easy, Dave. But you'll see those cameras too. And where they usually are is the light, like where your traffic lights and all are, they're sitting up above the traffic lights. They also put the red light cameras and stuff up there. Dealing with that camera, a little bit more difficult, isn't it? Like, you can't just Sawzall the freaking whole, you know, intersection lights down and shit like that. So I think that not just flock, because they're not the only people in the business, some of these surveillance companies are going to be going to a much more compact, different type of network camera that they're going to be able to conceal where not only would it be difficult for a vector of attack on it, it will be difficult to know where it is. And I'm actually surprised that Flock even went the route they did with these. I guess it's because they're one thing you need to know about them, they're not just selling to the government, they're selling to everybody. So there are people that have like HOAs that buy their own Flock cameras, and the HOA is the customer. There are golf courses that have and country clubs that have Flock cameras. There are neighborhoods that have neighborhood associations, right? And they have bought Flock cameras. There was a Flock camera destroyed somewhere in Georgia recently, and the big thing came down to whose is it? Because the local PD is like, that's not ours. The homeowners association like, I don't know. And that actually makes you like, you know, is it .fed? Or is it, can you just buy, like, can anybody just buy one of these? I don't know. But when you have, like, I think they caught the guy. And the problem with bringing charges on them is there's no one to bring the charge, like no one to press charges. Because local PD is like, it's vandalism, but it's who owns it? How do we know he doesn't own it? If it's his, he can cut it down, right? Like any lawyer would be like, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, who is the injured party here? Well, it's the people. How are the people injured? The county, local PD, the city, the town? There's no plaintiff here. Where's the plaintiff? So you can't prosecute them because you don't know who owns it. And that is a big question. Who owns that camera? How many of those cameras out there are not owned by who you think owns them? Who's putting them out? Is it our own, like I said, .fed? Is it foreign actors? Is it criminals? I'm not saying it's any of those things. I'm saying, and somebody says, you know, Patrick says China, and it damn well could be. But what I'm saying is when you have something that's a surveillance device like this and it's damaged, which that means whoever owned it, if that person said it's mine, I want to press charges. The value of that thing, you're talking a felony vandalism, right? This is not spray painting some bullshit on the side of a building. This is a felony vandalism charge that any prosecutor would love to jump on because they love felony convictions. There's nobody to prosecute. So there's all this like motivation to prosecute the person, but they still don't know who did it. I just find that really interesting. So just understand, if we do get rid of Flock, the problem won't go away. And for those of you that constantly want to link everything to AI, you can have a Flock camera without the AI data center in Sheboyganville. And who was it recently that just said something stupid? David Hogue, right? There I was when the shooting started. He was nowhere near it. That guy, right? He's now a lawyer, right? And he just did this post recently. He said, you know, if we're going to have data centers in these rural areas, then we should be putting data centers in the wealthiest counties in America. And he got his ass community noted on X. And it turns out Loudoun County, Virginia, per capita is the wealthiest county in the country. And they have the most data centers of any county in the country. That was interesting to me. But again, I think that we do need to separate the concept of AI and mass surveillance instead of lumping them together. You know all that BIP 110 shit I talked about? That's how that happened. All of a sudden, this isn't about just spam. It's about suit coiners and what's supposed to, like, all this shit gets wrapped into one thing to make you angry. What you always need to ask yourself is who most benefits if a narrative is accepted by the people? And if you accept the mainstream narrative that they're pushing about data centers being bad, who benefits? It ain't you. Even if you think it is, it ain't you. Your life won't get any better because they didn't build a data center somewhere. Now, I want to be clear. You can oppose a data center project for a reason that is site specific. And it wouldn't matter if it was a data center then. That's the other thing, right? Like, it doesn't matter if it's a data center. If it was a film factory, like if we were going to bring back film, if it was a TV manufacturing facility, if it was a sawmill, if you're going to destroy like something environmentally, that's a reason to oppose it. But just because it's a data center doesn't make it any more disruptive than any other large building complex, right? So I'm not saying that you shouldn't fight the individual construction if there's a reason. What I am saying is the people that actually benefit is China. This is a race. This is a technological arms race. And I think you're starting to see some of the capabilities it gives people. And this is one of those instances where we better have it because the enemy will. And China doesn't give a shit about all these crying people like, oh my God, this or that. If they want a fucking data center, they just build it. Right? So he said, why do they have less data centers than us? Well, first of all, you're trusting the Chinese government. But second of all, if they want to build a data center and they just want to keep expanding it, they just keep expanding it. They don't have to go through the bullshit we do in our country. They don't have freedom. So everything's owned by the Communist Party. So when they say we're putting a data center there, it could be as big as they want it to be. And they are going to get ahead in this race. And they are the people pushing the narrative that it uses all the water and all the other bullshit. If you water your grass, do not tell me about the water a data center uses. And if you can't explain the water cycle, both the long and short water cycles, don't tell me about the water that a data center uses, because you're not equipped to speak on the topic. Moving on, let's talk about the thing that never happens is happening again in Minnesota again real quick. So if you didn't see this, this guy that's kind of, I can't remember his name now, he's tied in with James O'Keefe. They went to the primary elections in Minnesota, and he walked around dressed up like a cartoonish looking Arab, talking in a terrible accent, right? I won't even do it because it's almost insulting to people of that nationality to do it as bad as he did, but he was making a point. So he had like his turban on and his jewelry and shit, and he's walking around with people in freaking burkas. One who they say is trans in the burqa, no shit. And saying they don't have ID, can they vote? And the answer that they got almost everywhere they went was, you can vouch for up to 8 people. You are the ID. So he presents his ID, right? I guess. I didn't even see that. But he was registered to vote anyway under some name. I don't even know if that was legit. And then he'd go, oh, no, we'll come back with more. Because he had like 2 with him. We'll get 6 more. Oh, okay. So this whole shit about we don't need IDs to vote, this never happens, most secure election of our lifetime, whatever, this is all okay. So what does the state of Minnesota want to do, right? You think the state of Minnesota, if they had any legitimacy at all, would be like, you know what? We need to fix this problem. Oh, they want to fix the problem by going after the person that showed it. They want to prosecute this dude for election fraud, even though he didn't vote. They didn't actually vote. All they asked is, can we? They got the comments on video to prove that it happened, so you can't say it didn't. And then they left. So if they had voted, that would have actually been voter fraud, right? Except you allowed it, so is it really fraud? But they were smart enough not to do that, right? There's no widespread voter fraud. That's what they always say. Yeah, and it's bullshit, right? Like, and especially when you look at some of these states, like these swing states, like if you can get a few hundred votes here, a few hundred votes there, a few thousand votes here, you can swing in an entire election. Whether it be a senatorial election or a much smaller scale, a House of Representatives or a presidential election, based on the way things run in our country and how closely divided we are. The thing that never happens is happening again. And it's true with the flock hammer thing we talked about too. How many cops have been arrested now? Within their own departments for doing things like tracking their ex-wife or their ex-girlfriend using the flock cameras. The thing that never happens is happening again. And I think one of the things you really need to think about with that, because it's a lot. If you go down that rabbit hole, there's a significant number of officers who have been reprimanded and or fired for abusing flock cameras for their own personal interest. Let's think about that a second. Do cops regularly rat out their brothers? Right? Is the blue line thin or is it actually pretty thick? Cops cover for other cops. I'm not even going to talk shit about that because I think in some instances I even understand why, right? Not many, but maybe a few. But we know they do it. So whatever the number is much lower than the actual number of the abuse. That's what we know. The ones that don't get caught or the ones that get caught and then they're like, Bill, what you need to do is take early retirement come up with some bullshit about, like, you want to go, you know, have your second childhood or go be involved with your grandkids or something and retire early. Because otherwise there's going to be an IA investigation, Bill, and you don't want that. And they just quietly go away. Or, hey, Bill, you know, there's an opportunity with Sheriff's Department on the other side of the county if you'd like to transfer, because you should. That shit happens all the time. We know it. They've been caught doing it. So the number of cops abusing this surveillance equipment is huge. So then let me ask you this. Did you see the Snowden movie? And that happened, what, 15 years ago? What do you think our federal government's abusing? How much of this is being abused? Not just violating rights in the capacity as a governmental agent, but how many of these people are running their own scams of some sort or another? And my answer would be probably quite a few. All right, so it's happening again. I'm not big on politics. I'm not big on voting. I don't personally vote. That's up to y'all. But I'm going to tell you that even I am a supporter of the SAVE Act. I would like to see that pass. I would like at least the rules that you guys have set for yourself in your own world of voting to be enforced. I would like the game to be square. I'll look at it like this. I don't care about basketball, but I want the game played to its own rules. Right? When I see somebody clearly get away with something they shouldn't, baseball, basketball, whatever, some sport I don't care about, I'm still like, that's wrong. That should not happen. And so I would love to see this done, and all the FUD, married women won't be able to vote and stupid shit like that. It's bullshit, right? Like, and every one of these left-wing lunatics, whenever they have their left-wing lunatic program, they always require ID for it. Mondummy, right, up there in New York, right, when he did the snow shoveling thing, you show up to help shovel the snow because we can't work shit because we spent all the money on other bullshit. Well, bring your ID with you so we can pay you. And now they're building these retard communist grocery stores, and somebody asks them the question, well, what's going to stop somebody from coming in here, buying a bunch of this shit, and then running across the state back to New Jersey and selling it? Well, we'll have like a library card ID system. So you're going to require ID to go to the grocery store. And what do they say? Like, we can't have voter ID because it's the the people that are the poorest that may not have ID. Well, the people that are the poorest are the ones that most need your community groceries. Like, this doesn't make any sense. So, again, we're back to the thing that doesn't happen is happening, period. Again, period. That's the way it is. All right, let's wrap up. I told you that these Monday Mayhems are going to be fast, quick, down, and dirty. I just want to remind you of a few things. Number one is my book, Laws of Life, Book 2, is for sale on Amazon. You can get it in hard copy, hardcover, soft cover, audio, which is done with virtual voice, or Kindle. You can pick it up on Amazon. You can just search for Laws of Life Book 2, or you can use the link in the notes below. Get on over to the website and pick up your copy there, and I'll make a couple extra cents as an affiliate selling my own product. I would appreciate that. And those of you that have had trouble getting Laws of Life Book 1 in soft cover because they're not doing the new edition, it looks like, at least here, they have fixed that problem permanently, but it should be obvious no matter what. All right, next up, also remind you guys, at the end of the month, so we're only a couple weeks out from this now, I am giving the keynote address at the West Virginia Homeschool Convention. This is in Charleston, West Virginia. It's going to be great. Even if you're not a homeschooler, I recommend you support homeschooling. It is a major force for liberty in our world today. And the information I will be presenting about AI will be interest to anybody that loves learning. Yes, I'm going to angle it toward how parents can use it to teach their kids. But one of my rules that I've built into this presentation is we should teach children like we teach adults. What a novel concept. You actually have to incentivize an adult to get them to learn. They don't want to learn shit that they know they don't need to know or that they're not interested in that won't benefit them. So we need to be able to communicate with kids as to why learning is important and get them excited. This goes back to Sue LaPrise, who used to be on our expert council for homeschooling. She told my wife when we started homeschooling our grandkids, Dorothy, just understand this. You can't make a child learn a thing that they don't want to know. And you can't prevent a child from learning something once they decide they want to know. So your job is to make them want to know. That was one of the most brilliant things I've ever heard somebody say. I've repeated it many times. I'll keep doing it. That's the angle I'm coming at with this. And let's say you can't get to the keynote. You're not going to come to the convention, but you want to hang out with some cool people, including me. We have a meetup at 6:30 that evening. This is the 29th of August, a Saturday, at 6:30 to 9:30 that evening at a place called Brick and Salt, which is at my hotel. So it's going to be very easy for me to get there. And it's a cool place. It's got a cool menu. You can order anything from a full meal to some appetizers to just some drinks. So come hang out with us. I'm going to make myself available for that 3 hours. And as a reminder, I am not accepting any invitations to anybody's place at all during this trip because I'm flying in Thursday night. I'm Friday night. I'm presenting Saturday. I'm doing a meetup Saturday night, and I'm flying home Sunday morning. So I just don't have the time. So I appreciate invitations when I travel, but there's just no time built in. That's why I put the meetup in. And last but not least, you are only, a week away from being able to pre-register, actually to sign up for the AI for Solopreneurs course. We're actually 7 days away, 7 days, 23 hours, 13 minutes and 0 seconds. That's a countdown page that you're looking at there. There's a link to that. You can get over to that page. And if you go down to the bottom of it, you can see join the waitlist. And that's really the only way that you're going to get in, because when we drop this, it'll be Tuesday the 24th, or 25th, which is next week. That's the day it's going to go on sale. It is going to sell out. And the reason I can tell you it's going to sell out is because this will be the fourth or fifth time, and it's sold out every time. And we have a lot of people that have registered since the last time, plus the people that didn't get in or weren't ready to do it yet. You know, we're at about an 8-to-1 ratio on the pre-registration list. So it's very doable if you get up when that thing goes to zero and immediately sign up, very doable to get in. But if you do not do that, you're probably not going to get in. You know, who knows? I mean, when we did the one really close to Christmas time last year, it sold out in about 20 minutes instead of 5. But we also did it where we almost broke the pay server because it was overwhelmed. And Tom had to put in kind of like a Ticketmaster thing that puts you in a queue and you wait in line to check out because we broke the damn server. And not our server. We broke freaking Strike, the merchant processor Strike. We broke their shit. So anyway, with that, we've wrapped up. I really hope you guys enjoy kind of the energy, the shorter form of this show. We are back and on the attack. Old school TSP every Monday from here until who knows when. Monday mayhem. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with a typical morning.
Are they gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Revolution.